typical of psychiatry at the time, and was psychiatry doing more harm than good at the time? I haven't the faintest idea, is the short answer. The long answer involves a lot of research and citations of scholarly texts, but I'd have to read those and keep track of them. The little research that I did on Victorian medicine, both psychiatric medicine and standard medicine, you know, reveals a lot more ignorance than you'd be comfortable having in your professional medical care. And that's certainly true of gynecology, which plays a role in the book. It was a time doctors were trying to consolidate their authority as the authority for medicine over things like spiritualists and midwives and herbal healers and things like that. So there was an effort to unify knowledge and to proceed along certain research paths, but it wasn't complete yet. So I think there were certainly a lot of cases of medicine more harm than good. I'm not in a position to say exactly what percentage of those cases there were. Somewhere between 0 and 100. Yes?
How many meals did you have to eat to come up with that menu?
How many meals came up with that menu? When I started writing the book, I wrote down a list of what are some things about Victorian England that scare me? And one of them is the menus at the time, which I don't think I'm really too far off the mark. Some of the old menus, which I did read about, it doesn't seem conceivable what people were consuming. And then you see the pictures of what was taken to be the way a gentleman should look, with a big belly and watch chain fastened over it and all that stuff. And so obviously they were overeating slightly, but the meals were astounding. So, yes, sir.
As someone who suffered in my youth from watching The Wizard of Oz and being pretty freaked out about it. Now, I lived in the South Bronx at the time, so why viewing the movie would be more frightening to me than walking out of my door, I don't know. But would reading your book help me overcome this childhood fear, which I'm sure is haunting me even more than my greater fear of what will be in after the next presidential election? Will it help me? Or
a common question. The gentleman asks, will reading my book cure him of his childhood fear of flying monkeys near Yankee Stadium? Yes. I would actually guarantee money back on that claim. I can't cure a liking for the Yankees, unfortunately. Modern medicine is stymied by that.
My question is about Joseph and his profession, and whether what inspired you to give him such a sort of macabre profession, and how important that was to the story and the general atmosphere as to the story, the creepiness.
How important was the husband, Joseph's profession, and why something so macabre and creepy? He's a medical researcher doing quite what I have actually done some research on, quite plausible medical research at the time. And the roots of much of our knowledge of infection comes from such research. What creepy or macabre depends on your point of view. Surely if you're the Beagle, it's plenty creepy. If you're the one who gets the disinfectant, then less creepy. I picked it for that very reason. It was something which, for many people at the time, was something that they would protest. George Bernard Shaw wrote against vivisection, and it was very controversial. And yet the medical researchers who were involved in it were certain that they were doing something of the utmost medical importance. So it was because it's so ambiguous and how you would feel about it is so variable that I picked it, so that it could be both creepy and important at the same time. Yes, sir?
What gave you the idea of writing a ghost story?
What gave me the idea of writing a ghost story? I don't know, is the answer. Writing books has some parts that are very... You know exactly what you're supposed to do, you have rules of how to do it, and then other parts you just sit around and wait for a good idea to hit you. And I was walking my dog, a beagle, and I had an idea that would make a good ghost story, and so I thought that's what I'm going to write next.
I had one question, which is about the order that you chose, or whether you actually chose the order of the first three stories, if you considered putting them in a different order than you did, like the husband first, or... Anne's story first, and how conscious was that as a writer?
I tried all varieties of it over the course of writing it. When I realized there were going to be different perspectives,
yeah,
there were only four, so I'm not a mathematician, but there aren't that many possible arrangements. There's like two. So I tried all of those, and then the one that made the most sense, obviously, is the one I picked. I wanted each one to obviously contradict the one before it,
mm-hmm.
and to I wanted to start with the most far-fetched. So that then things sort of followed from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did you read any other works that were done in a similar way in terms of told from different perspectives? Same story.
Did I read any other works that were similarly structured, told from different perspectives? I cannot think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure that I did. Anyone else able to think of one?
Faulkner did one.
He's quite good.
I was actually thinking of asking you, when I hear same story, four narrators, different styles and perspectives, I thought of The Sound and the Fury. I wonder if that... something you're familiar with, if you have a reaction to that.
Yes, I did.
Possible comparison.
I've read The Sound of the Fury, not for this and not recently. I can't say that it was much on my mind.
The Egyptologist, I mean, if you've read that.
Someone recommends another fine work, Egyptologist, told from different perspectives and different points of view. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that one.
Mr. and Mrs.
That's a hell of a book.
Mr. and Mrs. Bridge.
Mr. and Mrs. Bridge. I have not read them, but I know there was a Paul Newman movie, and I admire Paul Newman, and his voice is in Cars, which my son loves. So yes, Mr. and Mrs. Bridge.
Poisonwood Diaries, you said?
Poisonwood Diaries, anyone? Sorry, yes.
The Sweet Hereafter.
Also told from many points of view. Also have not read it, unfortunately. Sweet Hereafter by Russell Dacke, sorry.
Also, The River at Midnight by Jean Nattel. Somebody Nattel.
I'm not coming off as all that well read. which wasn't necessarily the point of this conversation. So let's just nip this in the bud and move on to something more about the Minnesota Twins. Yes?
I had a question kind of about, you know, the tension between being sympathetic to the male and the female point of view, and if you felt a lot of tension, and if you felt like you fell on one side or the other, and if, since you've published your book, have you received any kind of backlash or critique or response from sort of feminists as to whether you have... I was just curious, you know, do they say, oh, this is a great, you know, kind of feminist reading, and was it challenging to show this in a, as a man, to show something from a point of view that was so seems to be so sympathetic to a woman?
So the two questions. One, was it difficult to go back and forth in sympathy from the male point of view to the female point of view? And the second question, have I received criticism or backlash or... discussion about that, the effect of that from a, writing from a male point of view about the women's, writing from a male, I guess, body about the women's point of view. Sympathetically, I didn't find it that difficult just because it's just what I'm doing all day anyhow is trying to figure out how to tell something from somebody else's point of view and what it is they're seeing and feeling. And so it didn't seem like an unbridgeable gap to go from male to female. Otherwise, it would be all adventure stories, I guess, and nothing but.